Did you pick your pants with secret when you left your office last night and you closed the door behind you? Were you walking in your sleep or were you just too tired to notice all the watchful eyes upon you? Where's the man who does the maintenance and the maid who cleans the carpets in the hall? In the guard down in the lobby through a hidden TV camera saw it all.
Insurgent Radio Network calling. Insurgent Radio Network calling. This is the Insurgent Radio Network, and this is Terrible Tommy. Tom Metzger right here in the bunker.
Your host for Race and Reason, the longest-running show of its kind in North America. Yes, we talk about race here, and we believe in free speech, too. This is a small island of free speech in a sea of controlled and managed news across North America. Today we have a very interesting show for you. We have an author with us that has written a very controversial book if it appeared on your library shelf. It's called Hear the Cradle Song. Mr. Gunnarsson, it's good to have you with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
We want to talk about this book.
Okay.
This is a hot one.
It is. It's an action-adventure novel set in the Los Angeles Basin in the not too distant future, basically dealing with the territorial instinct, race, friction, and violence, and the way assorted people manage to survive and cope within that in complete social chaos.
So this is a book that is primarily centered in the Southern California area, and it's what's after a breakdown in much of the infrastructure of the country?
Yes, the social fabric has come apart, and this book deals with the events after that has occurred and various people in their attempts to survive and basically live under those conditions.
So we have these various racial groups pretty much reverting to a tribalistic idea. Was that fair?
Yes, it is. The desire for exclusive territory, to practice your own lifestyle, the way you would like to practice it, and aggression towards all others.
So we find this sort of a natural selection unfolding, and we don't want to give the whole book away. We want people to read it, but we have the blacks. They have their division and their territory, and we have the Chicanos, the Mexicans with theirs, and I believe
yes,
there's some Asians too.
That's true.
And then the whites,
right,
trying to reestablish and
basically hang on.
And in this book, the whites are being misled clear at the very end, right?
That's true. The true believing syndrome and the people who wish to exert influence over those in their societies try to maintain the charade right to the last bitter fiasco.
Sort of like the last days of the Romanovs, huh?
Yes, or Imperial Rome,
yes.
Even.
Yes. Now, you might ask, audience might wonder why your back is to the camera, but Mr. Gunnarsson, young man, he has a career and he'd like to keep it, and we're sort of hiding his identity a little bit here because we hope he's going to be around to write many more books. We don't do this too often, but once in a while we feel it's a need to be done to protect people. We can't have all our troops identified and ruined. There has to be a few guys like me out front, but we don't have to show all our cards.
It's sincerely appreciated.
Right. So what gave you the idea to write a book like this?
Well, I had read the Turner Diaries and Hunter, Candidate for the Order, and I wanted to write a book in which women, as part of the plot, played significant roles, because I think in any action-adventure novel, particularly the ones that deal with racial issues, the women characters are basically fluff to be worked around by the male characters. I wanted to show their importance, the way that they could function under these conditions, the significance of the European female prior to Christianity's influx into that territory. And so that was the main reason. But I should say at this point that the title, Hear the Cradle Song, doesn't have that much to do with child rearing or children in their cradles. So I don't want the viewers to be misled on that.
No, it's definitely not a passivist type of book. No. Now, yes, this type of writing goes back some time racially with Jack London, who wrote many racial books. He was an outspoken white supremacist all of his life. And, of course, Thomas Dixon wrote some novels, The Klansman, I believe, and several others. And then there was a book came out in the 70s, I believe it was, called The Chosen, that was a novel about a breakdown in society at that time, with some interesting concepts. And then,
yes,
up into the 80s, where we had the Turner Diaries, which has become quite a famous book, notorious or famous, however you want to look at it.
It has, from what I understand. Yes.
Supposedly, it became somewhat of the basis of the Order of Braunschweigen, the revolutionaries who declared war on the United States and
yes,
struck out in doing their thing. Robert Matthews was killed by federal troops, and his men are all serving long terms in prison. Then there was The Hunter, which is another aspect, another way of looking at it. And The Candidate for the Order. That was an excellent book. Thinking back on it, though, I think you're right. I didn't think about it so much at the time. There was a lack of the female point of view and how it affects the whole racial thing.
Yes, and I think that it's a mistake to neglect half the populace if you want to promote an ethnocentric point of view or any kind of awareness about your past, your ancestry, and you value what you have in terms of what it might bring in the future. And what those books did, aside from being as entertaining as they were, was to basically ignore or neglect the female component. And that's one thing that I tried to improve upon in this.
Where does that come from? Is that the vestiges of the right wing, this thing about the women can't do this and the women can't do that, and a sort of a hand-me-down from Christianity and Judaism?
I think that that is exactly what it is. When you take a look at pre-Christian Europe, there were women who were organizing. Well, for instance, Leif Erikson's daughter organized a Viking expedition all the way to the New World while she was pregnant. Now, that's quite a feat, and that shows a considerable capacity for organization and physical endurance and so on. And I think that the lack of this in these books and other materials just shows that those people who are writing them, as capable as they are and with whatever ideas they have, are slightly out of touch. I mean, you cannot cut off one arm and expect to do the same amount of work, and by ignoring the female element, that's basically what they're doing.
Yes, I've noticed too, you know, in the history, the Nordics, the Vikings, that the women were many times the doctors in the tribe and many times became the warriors when needed. And I've recently read some exploits of the Aryans on the steppes of Asia where they were quite nomadic and had tremendous numbers of wagons that they took around with them, and it said that some of the women were, a single woman would be in charge of 20, 30 wagons pulling across the
steps. Ancient history does point that out, and I think that today, whether you're interested in radicalism or racial awareness or just maintaining some kind of an order in what you have, it's foolish not to get everybody involved. And there's a lot of intelligence and there's a lot of capability and new ideas that are shut out if you proceed in an all-male way of doing things. And I'm not suggesting feminism. In fact, if any of the women viewing this show care to read this book, they will get an idea of what women can do for themselves and how they can develop themselves without the concepts of feminism being involved.
Well, in the Blade Runner society we seem to be entering into, it would seem that that would be something that women should understand, because women are more and more the targets of violent crime and everything else.
I would say so. Everything from people looking to make them a trophy wife, as in the Simpson debacle, to just, like you say, targets for crime. And
there were women in this book that there were so many different personalities, and from the jaded jet set from Newport Beach and their attitude like it can't be happening.
That's true.
And we have to flee, but I want to take everything in the house with me, and they don't have that kind of a choice. And then also the gradual conversion of some of these women from materialistic, soft people to real warriors.
Yes, the characters, and all of the characters, if there are male viewers watching this, they're probably thinking, ah, he wrote a book for women, and that's not the case. There's male and female people in there that play significant roles, but I think that the reader will find the characters very entertaining and diverse, no matter what sex they belong to, and the trials and transitions that all of the characters make say quite a bit for what a person can do in their own life. This isn't just an entertaining book, a book to read for action and adventure, that kind of thing.
Yes, it was a cross-section of people, the elderly, the young, the women, the men, all of these people, and how they react when it's right down to the wire and where your life is on the line. And I think that's what is so prophetic about this book. I think it's prophetic. And it certainly is not a so-called women's book.
No.
As it's not just a men's book. It's the totality. And
it's for everybody.
Yes. And I could say people could learn a lot from reading this book in case those kind of conditions continue to evolve.
That's true. There's also a number of other components involved in it that people would be interested in, such as the effects that Christianity has on our society and our minds and what it produces, to the idea of conspiracies within conspiracies and the group setups between people in whatever racial group they belong to, which illustrate that regardless of what kind of group it is, you're always going to have somebody in there out for himself or trying to cover his own behind. And there are physical conditioning, that's another thing that's brought up. Mythology and a practical understanding of that, old European mythology.
Yeah, most people, when they think of movements, always want to think of purity. Well, if I get into this group or this organization, it's going to be totally pure and there's never going to really be any dissension and we're just going to march into the sunset and win. But that's not the way it is in real life. It's a million different reasons people are involved. They struggle. In fact, I think the exhibition of life in a movement is that there is sort of a fighting and a struggling going on, indicating there's life there. I mean,
certainly. And in terms of the white groups that I mention in this book, Very few survive. Well, I have one that survives the chaos and the government crackdowns that were before that. And they are basically shown to be ineffective because of lack of membership. And just by chance, they happen to team up with another group of people and try to maintain a foothold in the Los Angeles basin. But if a person is interested in groups these days, I would suggest taking a look at the Waco incident. And that should pretty well illustrate what happens to groups when they catch the eye of certain official elements. And to believe that a group can become so capable and so competent and so large that they can actually challenge the social order before being infiltrated and annihilated, I think is sort of unrealistic.
It is very unrealistic, even though there's been some attempts at suicide-type situations.
Yes.
If people go into that with that understanding, that's one thing, but... to fool themselves into believing, like you said, that they can sneak up on this bureaucracy is a little immature.
Yes, if you are content to have a membership card and receive monthly bulletins, if that's what you're looking for, then I think, well, great. But if you really have aspirations of change, then it's basically you might as well retire to bedlam, as the saying goes.
Also, don't you feel, too, that when the so-called crap really hits the fan, even worse, that it's going to change things so much that you're going to see people that you never would have expected that will move into leadership positions just by natural evolution, that people you would have never thought, maybe even being on the other side. But something happens to them, and suddenly... Well, I never heard of this guy, and he's running the operation.
Inspiration of the moment. I think that that's a possibility if things did deteriorate to the extent that you would see a lot of people emerge from the shadows, so to speak, and really become significant. And the promoters, the usual people you see in the groups may not last, or if they do, they may not have such a significant role.
And some may just run and hide.
Yes, that's true.
Hey, this is the real thing. This is not just selling magazines.
Horn blowing is a lot different than doing things in reality.
Incidentally, Mr. Gunderson's book, Hear the Cradle Song, if you have other questions about the book, just write to our address, and we'll be happy to give you more information. I found this one of the more graphic examples in the book was when all these corpses are hanging from the lampposts all along the freeway. I think it was
scattered along the freeway,
Santa Monica Freeway, was it, I believe?
Yes.
And people are fleeing to try to go from one area to another area where they think there's some safety, and you can smell the stench of the bodies and all this.
There's a certain amount of that, and I think for a person who is looking for adventure and action in a book, they'll be well satisfied with this. It provides more than enough of that sort of action. But I would like the viewers to understand that they'll be getting a lot more than that. This isn't your standard paperback novel you'd find at some supermarket shelf. You'll learn things from this.
So it's not just a cut-and-slash book.
No.
But I believe that incident was where they wasn't that the Mexicans were trying to warn people not to come up the freeway.
That's true. The white territory in Orange County had been annexed by the Asians, and there was an ultimatum issued that there was so many days to evacuate or basically be annihilated. And so the choice was how to get up to the Beverly Hills, Bel Air area, where there was a concentration of white people. And the ordeal between Orange County and Beverly Hills is passing through the Hispanic or the Latino territory of Aztlan. And, of course, being an exclusive territory and the territorial instinct comes into play, and you get this widespread massacre and butchery taking place.
And it's amazing, too, because it's really so close together. This all takes place in such a relatively small area.
Yes.
But in reading it, it's almost like a continental thing, when you're looking at it.
Well, when automobile travel becomes impossible, those freeways can get awful long.
Yes, from Orange County to yes. Beverly Hills on foot is a long
yes.
way. So, and it's interesting that you chose Beverly Hills.
Oh, I couldn't resist it. I mean, with the money and the personalities there and all of the people to choose from as characters, it was impossible not to.
I noticed that in this white community, there's quite a bit of strength from Jewish interests. In fact, they seem to be manipulating things quite a bit.
They are the Zionist element, at least, is the holdouts from the motion picture industry and Hollywood, and of course with their holdings and their influence among people in general there, and the hobnobbing and elbow rubbing, they're in a position to do quite a lot of string pulling, and they do. It's a matter, in fact, in this book you will find that each group approaches its quest for power and its idea of how things should be in its own way, and in this particular instance with these people, it's behind-the-scenes string-pulling and scheming and this kind of thing.
Somewhat typical, would you say?
For some, yes.
For some, yes.
Yeah.
And I thought it was quite amusing, including the doomsday device.
Yes, that adds a little bit of spice to the situation, and the reaction of one particular Zionist to that, and very entertaining, and another example of how groups can come apart rather quickly, even from the inside.
Well, what gave you, I mean, what got you, have you written before? Have you written other things?
Nothing like this, and I intend to produce a sequel of this that is much more in depth on a number of things, the European mythology, and again, the role of women, and a number of other components that are briefly touched on in this book. But I have not written anything in terms of a novel. This is the first one.
So we can expect to see more. That's good.
I would hope so.
Have you had much flack from writing this book so far?
No, as a matter of fact, I haven't. A lot of people that I've given sample copies to have been surprised and a little revolted at the graphicness of it, but it's nothing that you won't see at the movies. And as far as the political incorrectness goes, the official channels have been ignoring it completely, so there's been absolutely no backlash there.
Well, they probably won't ignore it forever because even the Turner Diaries became quite a topic at some point.
I think that the reason why the Turner Diaries and Hunter drew so much flack is because they dealt with the here and now rather than the future, and they also had a group, which, like I said, I consider unrealistic, but anyways, they had a group emerging out of the woodwork to challenge the social order, assassinate FBI agents, and take over the government. Well, when you start preaching things like that, those in the government and in the FBI sit up and take notice very fast. And that's a good way to call attention to yourself. In Hear the Cradle Song, the government has more or less folded. The FBI doesn't exist. And the assassinating of these officials and everything is bygone.
I see. And so you have sent these books around. Have you sent them around to any talk show people?
A number of them, and I, not being familiar to the talk show scene, wasn't up on their methods of doing things, and I understand now you have to have a press kit rather than a sample book, and I think that's why there's been no response there.
Now, what do you think? Now, you've written a novel, but what do you think is in our immediate future of the next 10 years? Here in North America, practically speaking?
It's difficult to say. I would not like to see what goes on in Hear the Cradle Song happen, if it's at all possible. Unless there's a change from the top down, I can't see anything else happening but this. But as far as what happens in the next 10 years, you have to take a generational look at things. You have what I call the dollar bill worshippers that are now sliding out of the positions of power. And in their place are coming the hippie flower child generation, the Bills and the Hillaries and so on. And these people may have their hair cut and they may take a bath now and then and, you know, not like they were doing 20 years ago, but their points of view haven't changed. So you're going to have them promoting and causing a particular kind of mess that is special to them and their thinking. And behind them you have the yuppies, the me generation, and each one is going to do things differently. Plus, you have the lack of offspring to replace the old people. And guessing, I would say it's possible further breakdown in society. Hopefully, it won't happen.
Well, do you get the feeling that with the massive numbers of non-whites from the third world entering the nation and the birth rate of these people, which is going up, you see the average European woman has a birth expectancy of 1.6 children. United States, it's 2. Well, I would consider the difference there being the non-white population. I see, and I wonder whether you see, the racial confrontations being kicked off by blacks against Latinos, Latinos against blacks.
Absolutely. In fact, the media has portrayed anybody interested in race as basically white up till now, and people, I think, have the idea that racists are white, but the Koreans don't get along with the blacks don't get along with the Latinos don't like the Vietnamese don't like the Chinese, and so on. And it is as rabid as the Ku Klux Klan and their point of view against anybody else between these people. Since they expand in numbers so fast, you're going to see clashes and confrontations between them a lot sooner than you're going to see it between whites and somebody else.
So it would seem like it would be the whites will get started by simply reacting or trying to get out of the way, most of them.
I think so. I think there'll be a lot of shuffling of the population to different areas of the country, and it may just end up where there's a patchwork quilt of little sub-nations. And if there's not too much dust raised and feathers flying in between that, hopefully there won't be.
Sort of a balkanization of this country.
Yeah.
And speaking to a Japanese person in the Los Angeles area or Orange County, he was quite concerned that the Koreans were all moving out of L.A. because there are a lot of them because of the blacks, and they were moving down close to the Japanese. The Japanese didn't like the Koreans. And like you say, in talking to an Asian, the animosity between Japanese and Koreans and Vietnamese and so forth is actually probably more than animosity between whites and blacks.
Oh, I would bet on it, any amount.
When I was in Japan, and my son and I giving a seminar, we found that they were highly racist, and they loved those racial jokes at the expense of their opponents.
Yes, most of this goes here, at least, behind closed doors. And everybody, oh, yes, you know, the Chinese and the Vietnamese and so on, but they're people, and it has been maintained that way for 10,000 years, exclusive territories and the desire to be apart. And when everybody is shoved together like this, they grate on each other. You can't get around it.
It's been great to have you on the show, Mr. Gunderson. Time has flown, and we wish that you'll write many more books like this.
Well, I'll certainly try.
And it's, again, very nice to have you on the show.
My pleasure.
I'd like to have you back.
I'll be happy to.
Thank you. And thank you out there for joining us on Race and Reason.